Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Snapshot, episode 67. I'm Brendan Patrick, joined always by Marvel Snap phenom Cam Best. Cam, you're weak in Marvel Snap, sir.
We are two episodes from our nicest episode of all time. I hit rank 69 yesterday. It feels good to be back where I belong, you know? I was thinking about, you know, Tracy Chapman's Fast Car. You know that song, right?
Yes, I do.
Chorus goes, you know, I had a feeling that I belonged. That's what it feels like to hit rank 69 for me. It's like, oh, man, this feels nice. Mm. More generally, though, I mean, I got to tell you, I just love playing Angela. Like, I didn't realize how much I missed her until she was back and I could make a video that was like five decks to play and every single one was an Angela deck. And I was just like, holy shit. And they're all so different. And I love her so much. I missed her so much. And I didn't realize how much I hated Thanos until he was gone. I didn't realize it, but it's like, it's one of those things where it feels like a weight is off that I didn't even realize was on me. It's like, oh, man, I want to stream multiple days in a row now. Like, I really want to play.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like we've been talking about Angela for a long time. And of course, Thanos just as a result of how the metagame has shaken out for the past few weeks. And that both happens in 1 week. It's pretty interesting. We talked right before we came on the podcast and you said you'd received a lot of nice comments in regards to the interview. I did. We had a lot of comments for the interview.
You got some ones that were dunking on
me? I got one and it's not dunking on me. I just thought it was so funny because it was it was the last comment that I read. This one is from Mathis and we're skipping around here. But he goes, Mathis says, pretty disappointing interview. Half of it wasn't even about Snap. And softball after softball question. Like, what are we even doing here?
I actually did think about that, right? Because it's like, we have relatively exclusive access to Glenn Jones. I feel like if I'm a journalist, right? Mm-hmm. I like Glenn Jones too much to do journalism with him.
Yeah.
Right? I actually, like, this guy's probably a dickhead, right? Like, don't get me wrong. But I do think that there is a grain of truth here where it's like, you know, is the fact that I like the game and I like Glenn, does that make me the wrong person to be antagonistic in an interview like this? Like, were there things that I should have brought up that I didn't bring up? I know Ordinary Harry mentioned that he felt like there was a specific part of the interview that he felt was dishonest, which is when Glenn said that the best performing blob deck was the Living Tribunal one. Mm-hmm. Right. He was like, I need to know how you fucking got that data. Like, I need to know how that ended up happening. Right. How, like, OK, does it really matter if you have this one deck with 100 games and then Thanos is like one percentage point lower and it has 10 million games? Like, is that really a reasonable thing to talk about? Right. And that was Harry's point. Right. It's like maybe I should have like tried to dive deeper onto those. Right. But like, I generally do believe that they're operating in good faith. I do believe that most of the time. Especially on the design side, right? Like, I don't know any of the people on the product side. I obviously can't speak to that. But there's like these things where it's like, it feels like I'll get mostly good feedback. And then a couple people will be like, you know, you really should have pushed him harder on thing A, B, or C, right? And I sometimes wonder if maybe that's true. Like, if I genuinely, like, I'm not experienced in having a media platform. I don't know what that's like. It's like you have a responsibility to the community. It's like, I have no idea what that means, right?
Yep.
I just do what I would add. Like, I have those conversations like, this is what I want. Like, I want to ask about this stuff. This is where my brain is at the time of the interview. Like, this is what came up organically in the conversation. And I do wonder if there is some sort of, like, I don't want to call it journalistic obligation because it sounds like I'm sticking my nose up my ass. Right. But like, genuinely, I am interested to know what the community thinks about this, like, and how to approach this kind of stuff, because I know sentiment on Second Dinner specifically varies pretty widely, right? Whether or not people like them or don't like them. And I think that there is a decent chance that by asking this question, I will simply enable all the people who don't like Second Dinner to be like, Cam, you fucking idiot, you were too nice. And all the people who do like Second Dinner to be like, no, you did great. There is that risk. Anyway, I'm sorry for yapping this whole time. Like, it's just something that's really genuinely been on my mind. So the yap is over.
It's been
tell me when I'm right or wrong.
Multi-year battle I've had. Not a battle, but it's definitely an experience. For so whenever
yapping?
No, when everyone whenever you have someone on a podcast, I think just the way media has been for like most of our lives is like we're used to these things being interviews. I actually would not describe Glenn coming on the podcast last week as an interview. I'd describe it as a conversation. And we get lumped into this interview sort of kind of bucket, right? Where it's like, that's actually not the intention of the podcast, especially round two. Round two, Glenn is much more... it's much more friendly. Like, we're very comfortable with him. We're circling back on other things. You know, we're hitting back on like all these other topics we talked about with like Runeterra, Flesh and Blood, NBA. I mean, you name it, anything not Snap. So yeah, while I think that this, the comment itself is actually, it's actually not wrong. Even though this guy probably is a turd, or sorry, I assume, but this person so is one probably of
the,
a turd.
I don't know if this guy is like, there's this weird thing that happens on the internet. And I also in just like general human interaction where you're like, okay, so this guy is an asshole to me in this one interaction. And so he's an asshole forever. And that defines his character to me. And there's, it's something that always interests me because like, not to get too psychedelic here, I think of humans as like very infinitely complex creatures with infinite potential for what face they put forward, right? Like there are a million different rolls of the dice that you could get with me any day. A lot of them are very similar, but none of them are exactly the same, right? And so things happen in people's lives and they express themselves in certain ways. And you only can see what the outward facet that you're getting in that moment is. And I think the internet is really bad for this because it locks them like that comment. Maybe like 2 hours later, he was like, I don't really feel that way anymore. I just needed to eat food or whatever. You know, like that happens to me. I know this is like an embarrassing thing to admit, but like sometimes I'll be like really grumpy and I'll be like, oh, well, I haven't eaten food. And then I'll go eat food and I'll be like, damn, I was being a dick. It's like that's a thing that happens to other people, too. But you never get to know that. But you only get to know your internal facets. Right. You only get to give yourself those excuses. So it's like it's always weird when I see like someone being a dick to me on the internet. And I'm like, you're such a fucking asshole. But it's like, I mean, I don't know that you're just being one right now. You know,
I mean, I think if you want to approach it in a way that, or the way I generally approach it so it doesn't affect me is that I think if people are being negative or critical on the internet without the intention of actually providing feedback and like they're being improvement, their state of existence in that moment it has to be bad, right? Because if it actually bothered you or like you didn't like, you would just move on if you were normal, right? It's like, it's not normal to just be overly negative. So it's like, it doesn't bother me. I hope whatever's wrong gets better. But the reason why I picked this out though is mainly because I feel like it's tough because whenever you have a guest on, you get lumped into this bucket of an interview, and that's actually not
the interview.
It's not the intention, like at all. It's the intention is really a conversation. Like my favorite part about having Glenn on is when we break down those barriers and we go deeper into like what is actually going on in Glenn's mind, even outside of his job, right? Which is like when we talk about Runeterra and Fab, and I think it's super interesting. But I had to pick out that was actually so we had like over 50, 60 comments, and that was the one negative comment, which is probably not the best practice for me to pick out that one because it doesn't really incentivize all the good actors, but
can you read some nice comments? Let's incentivize some good actors.
Oh, there was tons, but I have to pull it up on YouTube.
I want to incentivize the good actors. I don't want people to start thinking like, oh, if I start being an asshole, if I present the asshole facet of myself, you know,
that's how you get featured right there.
That's how you get my name read out on the podcast. Three good ones.
These are jokes, right? But first one is from Joey that pops up and says, only took KM 23 minutes to ask for a job this time. I think that was record time. And next one is from Amel1. They say, this is my favorite game balance developer podcast. Then, of course, in classic Snapshot fashion, favorite Glenn Jones podcast, favorite first half of 2026 podcast, favorite basketball podcast, backyard barbecue podcast. I mean, it goes on and on. Man bun podcast. Is this Cam's father? Like,
is this Cam's father? How old do you guys think I am? And how old do you guys think Glenn is? Actually, probably don't answer that. Like, there's no way for that to be complimentary to either of us.
Yeah. All right. For a nice one, we have one from Martifel. They say, every Snap player should be watching this podcast. Thanks, y'all. Keep up the great work. We did have a lot of comments, funny enough, about Adam Warlock. Like, it was just...
Oh, were the Warlock truthers in our comments?
Absolutely. It was so funny because when Glenn mentioned
Warlock truthers, Get out. When get out of the comments.
When Glenn mentioned that like people were really passionate about Adam Warlock and were really angry about like some of these changes, I was like, that's got to be like a super outlier. Like I've never
apparently
seen that.
Not.
And our comment section is like, there is some paragraphs on why Adam Warlock is worse after the change, how they ruined it. It was just like, I was like, damn, people feel strong about Adam Warlock.
I feel like it's just really hard for me to like, I had this conversation in my Discord after the thing dropped too. And it's just like, you know what? I just think it's really hard to argue with a 7 percentage point increase. Mm-hmm. It's just, I can't argue with that. Like as much as I would like to be like, it's like, I can see where they're coming from, right? Like the arguments are things like, you know, okay, Adam Warlock was previously usable as this thing mm-hmm. and is now no longer usable engine. As this thing. And so he's worse at being that. And it's like, okay, Adam Warlock was a card that like you could really get value out of if you knew how to use him, right? And it's just like people were playing him in bad decks and that was dragging down his win rate. And it's like, he made the decks bad. That's the issue. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I am willing to believe that it can be perceived as a nerf if you were using him specifically, like, you know, Bast Adam Warlock. It's a nerf to that deck. Yeah, but that deck was awful and bad, and it's a buff to the card as a whole. It's a very fascinating thing because, like, I think there are more Adam diehards than there are for any other like really bad card. And so, like, it's just a very odd choice to change, right? Like, why not M'Baku or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I just loved the little nugget of truth he gave us when he said, yeah, cards just are statistically better if they have stats. It's like,
typically cards with power are better than cards without power.
That's a good nugget of knowledge. All right, let's head into the news. We had two cards released. So usually our sort of pre-whatever new season pass podcast, which would have been last podcast, we do power evaluations for the cards that were coming up. Didn't get to do that because we had Glenn on. So we're going to be doing that this episode. But as a result, we had two cards already come out. First one is Baron Zemo, which is a 3/5. Says on reveal, recruit the lowest cost card from your opponent's deck to your side of this location.
I think he's pretty good. Like, I think he's in a solid place for a season pass card. He has like pretty defined upsides and downsides. Upsides are like that card that you get discounts Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. He is a 3/5 that gives you something else. Downsides are really fills up locations. And it can get like some really terrible stuff sometimes. Like it can get you some really bad stuff. I have had him pull a Mr. Negative before, mm-hmm. but I mean, to be fair, I've also had him. My greatest ever Baron Zemo play. The location that fills up with rocks, my opponent decided to play on that turn and skip the next turn so they could get a Mockingbird out for very cheap. They were Thanos. They had drawn a couple stones already. So I played a Baron Zemo on that location looking for Reality Stone and hit it. Mm. And they just had four rocks there stuck. It was a Baron Zemo dubbing out there. The rest of the time, like outside of like very specific situations where you're like, I bet I can pull some stupid shit off with Baron Zemo based on my knowledge of their deck. He's mostly a 3/5 that discounts Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. Pretty solid card. Like genuinely, I think if he was a 3/4, he'd be like a little bit worse. That was the buff he got, right? He went from 3/4 to 3/5 on the data mines. And I think right now he's like barely okay, and that's probably a good spot to be in. I do think that like his numbers are going to get really dragged down because there are a lot of people playing him in mill strategies where that it's just not a good deck, right? Like that's just not good. Don't play mill. If you ever put Yondu in your deck, seek help. I will say I think I undersold the Yondu nerf. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think I was wrong about the Yondu nerf. I think I need to offer an apology to the Yondu community because I would say that is like one of, if not the most unplayable cards in Marvel Snap right now. Holy crap, he's so bad. Even in a Zemo deck. And like, it is unbelievable how bad the mill support cards are. There's like Cable that's good. There's Zemo that's good. There's Gladiator that's good. And then you're playing Baron Mordo and Yondu and you're just like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, mill and snap is definitely an interesting archetype. Maybe we'll get there eventually, but I'm not sold quite yet. The other card is Red Hulk 611. When your opponent ends a turn with unspent energy, plus 4 power if in hand or in play.
Big. Lambie described him as the people's blob, mm-hmm. right? This is a blob everyone can play.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that really makes this guy compelling is Hope Summers, right? Especially with the reversion of Angela to being like a major, major threat. It makes him both more compelling and less compelling, because more compelling because with Hope Summers, you're going to be floating energy a decent amount of the time. Like sometimes you just can't fill it up. Your hand just doesn't work out. And that guy gets to be like a 619 or a 623. The other thing is this is a card that goes with Hope Summers because you make your arbitrarily large Kitty Pride and then you play your Kitty Pride and your Red Hulk on the final turn of the game. Right. So that is sort of the shape I see for him there, where he's just like, I'm a big Goliath blob type, where it's just like, I'm going to invalidate a lane alongside a Hope Summers, alongside a Kitty Pride, thanks to a Hope Summers and whatever deck you have him in. Right. So I think he's pretty good. And I think he is certainly filling a role that very few other cards can adequately fill. And I think that's one of those things where it's like, you know what, if you need something to fill that role, if you're going to play decks to fill that role, and typically biggest six drop is a role that is kind mm-hmm. of important, he's probably going to end up being worth picking up. I just don't know how necessary he actually is for legitimate success. Like, he's necessary to build a bunch of decks probably long term, but it's like, you know, you can play Loki without him. You can play discard without him. You can play destroy without him. You can play a lot of decks without Red Hulk, right? And so it's this weird thing where it's like, he's a good card and he's probably going to be good in a variety of these mid-range decks, but these mid-range decks tend to lose to Loki. And so it's like, do you want to invest in a card for that?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. All right.
Where are you at with Red Hulk?
Oh, I didn't even pick him up.
But like, this is why I ask, because like you're on a relative budget. Yeah, compared budget. To me. I'm like big balling over here.
Yeah, they gotta be busted for me to pick him up these days.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. Like, you're not gonna pick up Red Hulk. What was your thought process there?
Oh, it's just not busted. Basically, what I said. Like, it's pretty binary for me. It's like it's actually has to be like pretty close to like Loki power level. Loki's the high end.
What's your bar?
What's my bar? Let me think about the most recent one that I picked up. Well, it's actually kind of ass. I picked up Super Giant because I just thought it was funny. Yeah, I thought I like the, you know,
yeah,
Alliance.
It's gotta be busted, you
blow
know.
Up everything. Okay, maybe sometimes the Johnny comes out. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones where I look at the card. Do I want this right now? Do I need this right now? No. Mm-hmm. Would I be disappointed buying this for tokens in the future if I'm somehow way off on this, which is like there's probably a low percentage of that. And my answer is like, I'm okay with that. That's fine. I think it's unlikely enough that I'm okay to buy it for tokens later if it somehow is just broken in the future or we like missed it, the deck hasn't been created yet, etc.
I think that's actually a really compelling thing, because like if this card ends up being really good, it'll be worth the tokens mm-hmm. you spend on it. Like, that's the interesting thing about it, where it's like, you know, if this card does end up being good, it'll just be worth 6,000 tokens. That's just how it'll work, right? It'll be everywhere and the bar for six drops, and you'll be fine paying 6K for it.
That's how it goes for me. I mean, honestly, that's I don't pick up a lot of the synergistic cards these days either. So like, I mean, one of the decks actually was prohibitively hard for me to build, for me in particular, and this is someone who used to be series complete and still has a lot of the cards, was something like Discard. Because like Discard, they finally released Proxima and I was like, oh, that's a sick card. But it's like, oh, I need to get Meek as well. I need to get Proxima. And it's just like, I don't know how I feel about this. And it's also like, you know, I mean, also Destroy too. Destroy had X23 and yeah. So like some of those more synergistic decks, even though they're getting all these cool cards that really round out the archetype, those are usually the ones that I skip on because they're not really the good card soup, and good card soup is just like all the cards that are in my collection already.
There's this really frustrating thing where it's like when people talk about budget decks, they talk about like High Evo, Destroy, Discard, mm-hmm. right? High Evo is definitely a budget deck for sure. But Discard, that is 16,000. That is 18,000 tokens just in due cards. Mm-hmm. Proxima, Corvus, Meek, right? Like, just right there. And those are cards you're never going to use in any other deck.
Exactly.
You're only using them in that, right? And the interesting thing about Discard is there's no Nico Minoru there, when you look at like Destroy, it's like, okay, yes, you're using X-23 pretty much only in this deck, but even that, you can branch out and play like Silver Samurai, whatever the fuck, right? You can do stuff mm-hmm. with it, right? But Nico especially is a branching off point to a million different decks.
Yep.
And you can get Nico for Destroy and then use that as a guidepost to go elsewhere. And there's nothing like that for discard. There's no card in discard where you're like, I'm gonna pick that up and then go into another archetype. The farthest you get is like, oh, I'm gonna pick up Corvus and then go play Hela, exactly, the yeah. other discard deck. Like, you don't. It's very siloed off, right? With like High Evo, for example, you go pick up Nebula, you can move to a different kind of lockdown deck, you know, like it's a different, like there's branching off points there. But with discard, there's no branching off points. And that really frustrates me. I wish there was.
Yeah.
Like, even if you look at something like Loki, there's branching off points. You're getting Hope, Elsa. Like, it's a deck. You can shuffle other things into there, right? There's no branching off points for discard. It's weird.
Yeah, I feel like if you're trying to stay up to date with very powerful cards, like, you have to sort of pick a lane and what kind of cards you're going to pick up. And yeah, my lane is just not discard at this point, but it's also like, I literally look, if the cards are obscenely broken, I'll pick them up kind of regardless. And then outside of that, like, I'm usually just staying in kind of like bounce lanes, Thanos lanes, mid-rangey-ish kind of lanes, which is just good cards. So like, there are specific archetypes that I'm just like, I'm probably never going to play that archetype now. Because like, if I do look at something like discard, it's like, okay, I have to get Silver Samurai, Meek, Proxima, Corvus. It's like, it's overwhelmingly hard to get.
Yeah, it's like, it also, it's kind of like, you know, you think about a deck that's kind of siloed off, right? Like Thanos. Mm-hmm. Thanos, anybody? Nobody else plays Blob. Like, you can't play Blob anywhere else. You bought that for Thanos.
So that's the other lane, though, is like, if it's obscenely broken, I'll buy it no matter what. So Thanos kind of fell into that. That's why I have the Thanos deck. Also, yeah, that deck was, I guess, not also, but just reiterating the same point, like that deck was just so powerful that I felt like I had to pick it up, especially in lead up to the Snapfin World Championship, which I was casting. It was like, okay, this is the deck. So I'm not picking up practice deck. Anyways, getting to those OTA. Speaking of Thanos, rest in peace. Thanos 610, it now says starts in your opening hand and shuffle 6 Infinity Stones into your deck. How impactful is Thanos starting in your opening hand?
Okay, so you remember when we would run America Chavez and Thanos so we could draw our stones more? This is like if the opposite of that happened, and also it was a 6-10. Fucking sucks. It sucks so bad. I don't know. I want Thanos to remain around. And I get it. It's a controversial thing to say. But yes, I want Thanos to remain around. I do. I really do. And I kind of don't think it will after this. Like, I think they might have finally, like, really dropped the hammer. I do think the interesting thing about it for me is it's still probably the best Mockingbird deck, right? And she's still super busted, right? So, like, I feel like you could still play it and it'll still feel right. You'll just, like, have all these, like, oh my god, I can't believe I drew like this game of games. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the bad part of Thanos, like the part that you don't like when you play the deck. Yeah. All right. Still on the Thanos. Time Stone is switched to on reveal. Give Thanos -1 cost next turn, draw a card instead of draw a card and give it -1 cost.
Yeah, they dropped the hammer.
I know, this progressive nerf on Time Stone.
Yeah, I'm glad they did this one because like they're the same way they were Adam Warlock Truthers. There were that for Time Stone as well, who were like, actually, they buffed Time Stone, and they didn't. And we have that on record. Someone asked Glenn, he was like, no, it was a nerf. The card got worse. But like what did happen to Time Stone was it got easier to play. Mm-hmm. It got easier to just like jam out and there's no downside with a Mockingbird. So what I really like about this nerf, what I really like about it is they were like, oh, you thought it was fucking easy to play? It's not easy to play anymore. Fuck you. Now you have to wait and do it on turn 4 specifically to get your Thanos out on turn 5. Enjoy it. I hate you. Like, yeah, that's what, like, that reads as
super bad now. Yeah.
Yeah. They it's actually so bad that now it circles back around to you actually just play it out all the time because you just never care about what the effect is of
it. Yeah. It's just a cantrip.
Yeah. That is
a. That is a serious nerf, because now I feel like every time I play this card, it's just like, I would rather not be playing like, it's just like minus one energy, it feels like. And also,
it's minus one. Well, it actually just reads minus one energy. Your Mockingbird costs one less, right? Yeah. Like you draw a card, your Mockingbird costs one less, right? That's the card.
All right. Next up is Meek. Used to be a 1/1. It is now a 1/0. Same text. So when you discard this card, this gains plus one power and can move next turn. Just a one power nerf. One and zero is different, Meek, though. Glenn mentioned this, by the way. It's a huge difference.
But Meek is, it's not the same thing, right? Like, one and zero is different, but, like, he scales, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's, the interesting thing I think about with this is, like, I don't think it really impacts how good Meek is in the deck, but, if people are going to play Red Guardian to kill your Dracula, you can just hold a Meek. It'll be zero right next to him. Like, you can just be like, what? Like, I don't expect that to be like a common line or whatever, but I do expect that to be like, I got blown out for 8 cubes because I was going to Red Guardian their Dracula and they just put a Meek there. Mm. Like that is actually kind of messed up. It's actually like a very weird thing to happen. I will also say, I don't like that Meek is as good as he was in terms of that deck, because it's like, this card is so unplayable everywhere else. I hate it when a card is so unplayable everywhere else and it like has to be bought for a specific deck. We talked about the siloed off things. Thanos had this issue. Discard has this issue. Mm-hmm. And both of them are like the going into this patch, the two best decks in the game, probably. Like, if you looked at numbers, I would suspect that would be what would pop up. And I hate that. I really don't like it. But I don't really know how to solve it except to like push another card into the discard archetype and have it be a jumping off point. And then that doesn't really solve the problem, because it's still like, there's still like three prohibitively expensive discard only cards.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know if I'm like not okay. So I like the archetypes feeling very flavorful. And I'm okay with them having like specific niche cards. I think it's just the price point for some of them is what makes it hard. It's like, you can have a card that is just overwhelmingly powerful, very flexible, that costs 6,000 tokens. And then you can have something like Meek that only goes in one deck and does one thing. But in that one deck, it's very good. That is like a similar token amount. So as a consumer, it's a pretty easy decision, I feel like, for me to not purchase Meek, which is a bummer, because I love flushed out and flavorful archetypes. And I think the discard is way cooler now than it used to be. It's like a really sweet deck.
Meek is so cool. Like, the whole discard archetype is actually very cool. It gets severely underplayed, I think, because it's boring as hell. But it's just good and strong and does strong things in a cool way.
Yeah, it does. And it does it in a way that no other deck does. Like, not even close.
It's unique, and I think it's in a good spot. I do worry. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm actually just kind of grateful that it gets underplayed relative to its power level, because I think if I had to play it a lot, I'd be pretty annoyed.
Yeah, very unique deck. All right, next one is Kron.
Wow!
What do you mean? Unique? It's a unique deck?
I regret to announce my resignation. So
Crossbones is a 4/8. It is now a 4/10. Same text. That's a pretty decent buff. I might have to whip out the Supergiant deck again, bro. That's it. Make this guy 4/10.
Oh yeah. I kind of thought you were going for a different joke there. I'm not gonna lie. Nope. Like, no, you Crossbones whip out. You nope. don't.
Not nothing. Me.
Okay.
Not me.
Not you. All right. Fair enough. This is a good thing. I think it is objectively good that they're noticing, hey, we're doing a little power creep. And they're like, you know what? Why don't we power creep the thing that got power crept too? Like, why don't we just be like, you know what? If we think the crossbow, if we honestly think, you know, 4/10 downside is like fine, why don't we make Crossbones a 4/10 downside? That makes a ton of sense to me, especially in the context of, you know, Jessica Jones going to 4/9, Rescue going to 4/9. Why would we not have the things that are higher downside be stronger?
100%.
That's a good call. I fully support it. They should do it more. And yeah, this is like a direct refutation of the idea that like power creep can only be on cards people spend money on.
Mm-hmm. Next up is Sabertooth. Sabertooth was a 3/4. It's now a 3/5.
exact same thought process where it's like, it's very good they did this. He absolutely needed it. It probably won't even make him good enough, but giving him that extra point of power is at least a gesture of good faith where it's like, look, this is a card that you get very early on. It super duper sucks and it is monstrously unplayable. But now going to five, it's like that's actually just good rate stats and it's not probably going to make the cut necessarily. It might. Honestly, I think it's like pretty close, but it's just good that when you look at the three cost stuff, you're like, you know what? This sucks. It's also good to add more competition into various destroy decks. It can make them a little bit, have a little more variety in an archetype that has typically just been 11 cards plus one for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. Like it's been like that for a while. And I think that adding more actual synergistic pieces as opposed to like whatever you're having in your tech slot is a way of changing it. So it's now like, you know, 10 cards plus two. One of them is a synergy piece. One of them is a tech card. You know, like it makes it, it adds a little bit of texture to the archetype that I think is probably the most calcified in the game.
100%. Next up is Angela. Previously was a 2/2 and said, after you play a card here, plus one power. There's now 2/0. Says after you play a card here, plus two power.
My goat.
Oh yeah.
My queen.
She's back.
I love her. I cannot express how much I missed her. I didn't even realize it's the opposite of the Thanos thing. Like, I didn't even realize how much I missed her. I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea how much I missed like just playing Angela decks. It is incredible to me. I had a video today that was just like, Angela is so back. Here are five Angela decks. That's how much I love her. Right? Like, I'm lost for words. She lets you play Shuri Kitty, Loki, Silky Smooth, a variety of Miss Marvel mid-range decks. Like just like every mid-range deck. She is the glue. She's the glue. I miss her. I missed her so much. And frankly, I think that those decks needed it in order to compete with Destroy and Discard, who were
point slamming,
exceedingly powerful at doing the thing that those decks tend to do.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah, I'm super excited for Angela to be back. That's one of my favorite cards as well. All right, on to the Bend and Snap. We only have one this week, pretty much, and this is from Ben. They say, every now and then I'll visit the Discord and read some dev responses, and I'll come across someone asking about compensation for buying multiple variants for Adam Warlock, who they had to take out of 10-plus decks because he's ruined now. I'm not exaggerating. And I just think, man, working on design for this game is probably a lot less fun than it seems.
I should stop asking for a job.
It does feel like it. I mean, they do get a lot of things right. But I feel like even when the real catch 22 is with Second Dinner, and we've talked about this podcast specifically with Alex Kocha, is that even when they get things really right in terms of game design, balance, feel, metagame, it usually bumps up against the monetization system. So it's like they can have these issues like with Adam Warlock where they make a change and just from like a gameplay wise for people that really like that card, they get negative feedback. But even when they make like overwhelmingly positive changes, I feel like in the metagame, it can bump up against this other sort of secondary tertiary aspect of the game, which is the monetization. There's like just always this friction, which has to make it so hard to be a developer and a designer in this game.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I try to look at it in a vacuum. I think they've mostly gotten thing like I can think of a couple big whiffs recently. Pixie's probably like 2 points too weak, right? Mockingbird, it's hard for me to tell if Mockingbird released too strong or if it was just like, we're going to release this and then deal with Thanos, right? Like, I don't know if it necessarily is like this card is too strong or if it's just like, we've been trying to deal with Thanos forever. Let's just fucking deal with him, right? And not let the fear of Thanos prevent us from making a cool card because we're just going to deal with him as the issue. So, like, maybe they get a pass on that. I don't know. I think generally the rest of what has come out, I would say, since Blob nerf, probably. I think those are the only ones where I'm like, oh, damn, are you guys sure about this? I might be like forgetting a couple other ones. because I think like January was kind of rough, right? There was like meat and all of that. And I think that like very specifically, the two that really stick out to me as like, I hope there was something to be learned from this was Pixie and Mockingbird. Are like, I hope there was something to be learned from that legitimately. Because those are the ones where it's like, I'm not sure what the thought process was there, but I suspect that it involved, in both cases, just Thanos. And I kind of hope that without him there doing that to designs in the future, it's like, it's very clear Pixie was changed because of Thanos and Mockingbird wasn't, right? And so it's like, it sort of resulted in like, this is the thing where I talked about with like, if you imagine design as like a house with a bunch of rooms in it, and you go into a room and each of those rooms is a different design space. You open the door to the design space of generated cards and Thanos is just in there twerking. And you're like, why are you in this room? Get out of this room. I don't want you here. Right. So like, there's something to that, right? Where it's like, this is just unlucky that this season coincided with when they finally decided to deal with Thanos. Cause if they were designing these cards for a season 2 months from now, they wouldn't have had to deal with that stuff. And Pixie could have probably been a stronger card.
Yeah, I'm interested for what it's like on the back end, for like how to design or change the metagame in a way that is objectively better. Like, what are the measurements for what is an objective truth, as in a positive change? Because one person's least favorite metagame is surely, most of the time, someone else's favorite metagame. And you can kind of flip-flop those every which way for every single metagame. So it's like, is it deck diversity? Is it diversity of strategies? Like, what is it that actually makes a metagame more fun than its previous iteration? And I don't think it's like a super clear science. I'm sure there's heuristics, right? Like, more decks rather than less decks is probably a good thing. Like, very flavorful and very defined strategies. Things like discard, like that, that's good to have in our game. It's good to have flavor and this like different way to interact. But yeah, it just seems like a really tough position to be in, is like, what actually makes a card game better? Because it's not balanced, right? It's not making everything super balanced. It has to be unbalanced in a way that is fun.
I think it's lines, right? I think there's probably a threshold. And I want to say Glenn has alluded to this, that there's just like a threshold that when a deck passes it, either on like play rate X win rate or just win rate alone or cube rate or whatever it is they use to measure deck success. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll just call it deck success, right? That then they're like, all right, we got to flag this and do something about it, right? So like, I would imagine that, like, I don't know, I'll ballpark it. A deck has like a 15% play rate and like a 55% win rate. That's like, we got to do something about this, right? Like, that would be like the kind of thing where I would imagine where like, that is a clear outlier. Mm-hmm. What I don't know is like, okay, what if a deck has like a 54% win rate and a 7% play rate? Do you do something about that? Like, what I'm interested in is where the decisions are made on the margins. Mm.
What about the way the deck wins? What if the way the deck wins is particularly offensive to like the general player base? Something like Hela, right?
I think they're agnostic about that.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what I think is super interesting.
Yeah. I think they're agnostic about that. I like, this was pointed out to me by Torikun. Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm really shocked and kind of impressed at how the way Second Dinner has not played favorites in terms of what can be the best deck. Like, there have been decks this where it's just like, this is the most skill intensive mirror of all time. And there have been Hela, right? Like, this has there has been everything. They have allowed whatever it is to be the best deck to be the best deck. Like they wanted to nerf Destroy, right? Like, and that's something that if I would never do that. And I think Destroy is an amazing deck. I just think it should be the baseline, right? Like, it rocks. It's the coolest shit ever, right? And I am generally of the opinion, like, yeah, Destroy is awesome, but also it's the baseline. That's how good decks should be. That's what a good deck should look like. And I think that it's sort of weird that they're so willing to be agnostic about that, right? Because mm-hmm. if I worked there, I would be like, are you guys fucking serious? we have to keep this around until the Deadpool Wolverine season. Are you guys kidding me? Like, we can't nuke this.
I think it's easier to draw like parallels to a game like Magic that has like very, very polarizing decks, right? Like, you could think about like a mono red aggro deck, or just to think about your standard mid-range deck and if that was the best deck versus if the best deck was like Splinter Twin or some red prison deck or something like that. That just it the way it wins a game is literally your opponent must suffer. Like in real life, they must suffer. So there has to be like
contain your joy.
Yeah, there has to be. I know, right? There has to be like some non-zero level to which it's like the deck that is at that threshold matters. And maybe it does in Snap. Maybe it doesn't. What's particularly interesting to me is companies like Second Dinner and potentially companies like Blizzard that have access to large amounts of data. Like, do they have real actionable quantitative numbers where it's like this has exceeded X threshold, therefore we will now go change the design or make changes.
They certainly allude to it.
Mm-hmm. I would love like, to I know those numbers.
Right, but like if you're asking that question, it feels like the question you're asking is like, are they lying in the patch?
No, I don't think they're lying. I would love to know the numbers. I think it's super interesting when someone takes some a data like that, which is relatively subjective, and they make it objective where they go, the number's 55%. Why is it not 54? Why is it not 54.5? Why is it not 56? It's like, how did we actually come to the conclusion to draw the line here at this number? It's just a really interesting science to me.
I agree. That's fascinating. But I think you just summed up why, if I were Glenn, I would never tell you the number. Like, you'd be like, hey, what's the number? And then like 50 nerds would nitpick every decision you've ever made. And it would just be like,
well, I think it's an art. That's why it's actually not a science. Even though you're using numbers, it's not a science. It's an art, I think. All right, on to the main topic. We're going to do power rankings. First one here, US Agent 2-3, ongoing 4, 5, and 6 cost cards here have -3 power.
I'm going to be honest, this card reads like the weakest card of the season, yep. But if this is the weakest card of the season, this is a strong-ass season. Like, this is a 2-6. Well, just sort of baseline, this guy's a 2-6, right? Like, you guys know that like 2-3 is like a good stat line, right? And it's a 2-3 with an ability that pushes things downwards in a meaningful way. And if you're playing like a Sarah deck with Luke Cage or whatever, this is just like always going to be insane. If you're playing Cerebro 3, this is just like always going to be one of your best possible three power dudes to play. Well, there's just kind of a lot where this guy is just like just good. Right. This is like it's just a good card that does good card things. And I think his only real downfall will be the potential existence of Luke Cage. Right. Which does matter and is bad. And I kind of wonder about this card. I think most people have been saying he's like super bad, super unplayable. I have a more open mind about this card than I think most people do. And my mind is, in fact, so open that I will not commit to a position on him. I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to be wrong about this guy. I'm sorry.
It's an interesting card. Like you said, I think people underestimate the power of a 2-3 stat line, just like how vanilla it is. And this additional upside is, it's very, I don't know, it's very easy to realize. I think if you play this on turn 2 and you're like, oh, my opponent will just avoid the lane, like, that's not, that's fine, but this can also be played on something like turn 5 or turn 6 where you go 4 drop plus the 2 drop or some sequence of that. And if, like you said, if you're playing in a Sarah deck and you're slamming a bunch of low cost cards at the end, I think it can be particularly nasty if you can get it up to something, you know, I guess the floor is technically a 2-3, but I would say your mid range of being a 2-6 is pretty reasonable. And that's very powerful. Yeah. And 2-9 is disgusting.
Yeah, like it's like this is a card that just seems like baseline pretty good. Like, is that going to be good enough for you to be wanting to purchase it? I don't know yet, but it just seems like it's kind of hard for it to be all that bad. It's like, yeah, this seems pretty solid. Like, people compare it to Man Thing, and it's like the thing about Man Thing is it costs fucking 4.
Yeah, big difference.
That's really expensive.
Yeah. Big, huge difference. All right, next one's Red Guardian. It's a 3-3. Says on a veil, afflict the lowest power enemy card here with -2 power and remove its text.
Bye-bye, Zabu. Bye-bye. Get out of here. It is sort of frustrating. It's like, haha, we've released a counter card to Zabu, right? As Zabu's like an all-time low because you released a Hope Summers that's just like a better mid-range core card now. It's like, ah, damn it. Come on. We couldn't have had this like 6 months ago. This would have been really helpful in the height of the Zabu meta. Now we're in the Hope meta. It's very different. Mid-range decks look very different. I like this card.
Mm.
I cannot think of a single answer card Second Dinner has ever released that has actually been good enough to make the cut, though. The only ones that have ever made the cut in decks are the ones that were in the base game. Rogue, Shang, Ench. I think the only thing you could argue with me about that is you could be like, oh, Mobius and Luke Cage are answer cards, to which I say, no, they're fucking not. They're not what we're talking about here. We're talking about like a card that is a removal spell, right? A card that is to answer something your opponent has done, not to like to deal with a threat that is on the board, an amount of stats that is on the board or an effect that is on the board in a way that targets that unit. As opposed to just here is a blanket effect like Mobius or Luke Cage that may or may not make your opponent's deck unplayable, right? Like it's a different.
What do you think are some of the best targets in the metagame that are not Zabu?
Dracula.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Dracula is a really good one. If you can hit, like, for example, people play Hope Summers on empty lanes. If you can have priority, you hit their Hope Summers. That's pretty good. Even if you don't hit their Hope Summers, they're probably playing a Kitty Pryde in there. That eats it, too. Mm-hmm. You can try to hit things like Deadpool or Wolverine preemptively when they're about to get blown up. X-23. Like, there's a bunch of stuff where you're just like, oh, wow, the text on this card really matters. And if I can get priority and deal with it in this way, this card will do stuff, right? Mm. What I'm interested Multiple in, man. Though,
this hoses Phoenix Force, eh?
Sure does. Yeah. Or even just hitting the Phoenix Force before it can go crazy, right? Mm. Like, that'll do it, too. There's just a bunch of, like, interesting stuff, right? Where it's like, oh, you know, like, I could use a silence effect. Here's the issue I think this card may have, which is I don't see a ton of great targets for it in your typical like mid-range deck where you're just like playing a bunch of good cards. And it's like, yeah, you can hit a Jeff and you can maybe high roll a Hope and that's cool, but it's not going to stop them from winning the way hitting a Deadpool, hitting a Dracula, hitting a multiple man would do. Right. That said, I mean, if this card is good against Destroy, Discard, Phoenix Force, that's enough for it to be good.
Yep.
Like, that's just straight up enough for it to be good.
Yep. Next one is White Widow, 2-2. On reveal, add a Widow's Kiss to your opponent's side of this location. A Widow's Kiss is a 0-0. It says ongoing. This has -4 power. Disable this ability if your side of the location is full.
This card scares the shit out of me. I'm going to be honest with you, this is like the card that I am the most scared of this season. It fucks me up. I really. I have for the longest time said that a 2-energy green goblin would be broken.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have printed here is a 2-energy green goblin with no downside. And it is a priority tool. That's what this is. This is Lizard. Except it clogs your opponent and is also 2-energy green goblin. this is just like. She scares the shit out of me.
How effective is this in like bounce? You think triggering this multiple times?
I don't know about bounce because. The thing about bounce is, yes, triggering it twice is good, but, you know, if you're doing clog stuff, you're just going to want to do it on the same lane.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just like, you know. You put it in a clog deck. You are a combination clog slash Eliath deck. So minimum, she's a 2-2, put a rock on your opponent's side of the board. Maximum, she's a 2-2. She's a 2-6 for the turns that matter, helping you take priority and making them commit to a lane so you can then Eliath and or win in other lanes, right? Like that's, I just don't like cards that dictate gameplay to you so strongly. And White Widow does feel like a card that really strongly dictates gameplay. There's also just like some things where it's like there are locations on which this card is completely fucked. And I'm not even talking about like cloning vats stuff, which like, yes, it's pretty fucked on cloning vats, but every goblin is. The issue with this is that, you know, it's fucked on cloning vats, but also. It's like kind of a free roll to run. You don't have to be like a clog deck. You just be like, oh, this is a good card. I'll play it in my good cards deck and then I'll free roll these wins. Right. Like this is not a green goblin where it's very hard to fit in your deck. You have to be doing a specific thing for it to be good. It's not that. And I like, for example,
you are competing for an Asgard. Your opponent plays White Widow. How the fuck do you win the Asgard? What, are you going to fill it up? Like,
yeah, fill it up. Like, and the lose only the thing, as well.
Yeah, the only thing I see holding this deck and card back is the proliferation of Angela decks, because they're all like Jeff Kitty decks, which are very hard to actually profitably clog. And that's it. Like, that is like the only saving grace I see here. I am actually, I will say, less worried about this card than I was before the Angela buff, because the proliferation of Jeff Kitty decks is like actually a genuine check on clog shit. Mm-hmm.
All right. Last one here is Valentine 2-3 on Avila.
Valentina, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Put some fucking respect on her name.
I just wrote it wrong then, but yep, Valentine. I was like, it definitely says Valentine here. Like Ron Burgundy did. All right, next. It's 2-3. Yeah. It says on reveal, add a random 6-cost card to your hand, give it -2 cost and -3 power.
Local Loki main, very impressed by Valentina. yeah. I think she's gonna be pretty good. My real question for her is, does she make it out of the Loki archetype? Like, is this a card that can be non-Loki cards? One thing that's really striking to me when examining Valentina is I went through and I looked at all the 6-drops,
yeah,
right?
I was going to ask about that.
And outside of, like, Red Hulk, you take 3 power off any 6-drop, and it actually is basically just a 4-drop.
Just a 4-drop, okay.
Like, outside of, like, specifically Red Hulk, and like, which can obviously get arbitrarily large, like that dude's just big as shit. You know, Hulk is a 4-9, Magneto is a 4-9, Doctor Doom is 2, adding 5. That's like a slightly better Miss Marvel, but not like that out of whack, right? Like, Artem Zola is negative, Eliath is negative. You could argue those are kind of messed up at that price point, just getting them at that price point. But most decks playing this are not going to be able to profitably use them unless they randomly generate some other stuff. So it's like, I find it hard to feel like she's that out of whack in terms of like how she'll impact the game, where it's like, this is a card that is so obviously super broken. What the fuck were they thinking? It's more just like, you know, if you have an on rate 2-drop that gives you an on rate 4-drop, that's good.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also like the information you gave there is really good, though. If you actually do look at the 6-drops, it does just kind of break even and is on rate most of the time. Maybe even like, so you think that on the aggregate, would it be on rate or under rate? Because you have those like
under.
Okay, under.
Maybe under. I think on aggregate. Because there's like some no hits, right? Yep. Like you get a null or whatever, and you're just like, well, that fucking doesn't do anything, right? Like there are gonna be some ones that suck. I think 9 is sort of the ballpark that I seem to look at for like that's what you can reasonably expect from it. Now people are talking about like you know, okay, what if we have a loot cage, right? What if we have a loot cage and then all our cards don't get minus, right? That isn't that is that a thing? Maybe. Like, I don't really know if that's a thing. Is that worth doing?
It's a lot of hoop jumping.
It does seem like a lot of hoop jumping, but also like, you know, loot cage is the kind of card you're going to see a lot. But yeah, it's like, okay, there are, I want to say three cards that will give you double digit power. 4 cards that'll give you double digit power out of this, right? You ready for the list of them?
Yep.
Okay. Giganto.
Yep.
The Infinaut, Agatha Harkness, and Destroyer. Everything else is going to be 4-9 or lower.
Makes sense.
And it's like, that's really not that bad, is it? Is that really all that bad? I don't know. You're getting a lot of like pretty mid stuff. It's probably fine. Also, Red Hulk, of course, who will give you, you know, Red Hulk is the high roll off of this, for the record. Like, Red Hulk is big as hell.
Cool. Well,
hold on. I want to stop. I'm gonna introduce a new segment.
Do it.
Okay. The new segment is KM's been yapping for 30 minutes, and I want to know what Brendan has to say about these cards.
I said what I want. That's the thing.
No, you didn't. Give me a rating.
Give me a rating?
Yeah, you just said cool for Valentina, and you just said yup for White Widow, and I want to know what you think about Val and White Widow.
Okay, so White Widow, I don't know if I'd put in a tier, but for White Widow, it's like a card that
I would definitely look probably to pick up on day one. It looks extremely powerful, and honestly, it could be frustratingly busted. Like, I would not. So White Widow is the kind of card, maybe you sold me on it too much, where if they changed the stat line on it, I wouldn't be surprised. Let me say that. So that's a pretty big endorsement. Valentina, on the other hand, I haven't played nearly as much Loki as you have, but I do think the card just looks ultimately middling. Because there's a lot of it. Like you said, I do think that it's going to be underrate on average. And yeah, I just don't even, even if the average was on rate, like you get an on rate four drop, I still don't think it'd be very good. So you need to be doing more than that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. When the thing is a free roll upside on an on rate 2/3, right? Like, it's like, you know, especially in a Loki deck, it's like, well, there's no reason not to, right?
So
like,
does this only go in Loki? And I think that was how
that
you
is the
out.
Worry, right? Like, does this actually make the jump to being a usable utility card in other decks? And I really don't know, because like, Loki can obviously use it best, A, because it already runs Quinjet, and B, because it's a card. Because suddenly, if you're Quinjetting this thing, every six drop is like massively above rate for a three.
Oh yeah,
like really good for threes. But that, like, it's very clearly going to be a low key card, I think. But like, does it go anywhere else is a real question.
White Widow looks like the most powerful card, and I think that you illustrated it well when you said, or articulated it well when you said, that worst case, it's a rock on your opponent's end. Like, that's actually not that bad if they're having to fill up entire locations. Also, there's so many locations in the game where this just like kind of hoses your opponent. And there's all the obvious ones that have been good with the goblins, but there's also things like Asgard that are going to be really tough for your opponent to deal with. And if the thesis for this not being broken is the proliferation of Angela and Kitty decks, it's like, well, this card probably is broken.
Yeah, it is awkward. Like, I guess the other thesis for it not being broken is destroy, but I just don't have faith in destroy to like really hold a deck back. But destroy plus Angela Kitty decks, I think that could really hold a deck back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, with Red Guardian as well, it just looks like another one of those kind of like niche. And I'm
worried it's more of a super giant than anything else.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what it kind of feels like. It kind of feels like a Echo or super giant. I mean, Echo maybe a little bit more powerful than that.
But what if it's not?
What if it's not? Not? I mean, no matter what. So my question with this card is like, no matter what. So my question with this card is it always metagame contextual, or are you just, is like playing this 3/5 that hits, let's say, 70% of the time or something, like, let's say it was like 50. Like, is that just good enough? Enough? Or is it like, okay, the metagame is X, therefore Y, I can put Red Guardian in my deck and it's consistently hitting high value targets.
One thing I haven't thought about Red Guardian is like, is there a way to modify your opponent's card's power in a meaningful way, or is it all just blanket? I think it's all just blanket, right? There's no, like, I guess, you know, US Agent can modify card power in a meaningful way. Like, targeted. I guess Man-Thing can. But, like if you're, what I'm getting is, like, I wish I was, like, where you could just, like, specifically choose the card you're getting, and the only way to do that is power manipulation, and I guess you probably can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Overall, I think that the cards this season look pretty powerful. And I would put White Widow in a, not even in the same universe as the others right now. But that could be wrong. I think the other ones could be more powerful. White Widow just looks very, very strong in most. I don't know. It's a 2/2 still, but I mean, it's like, I feel like I'm being too much of a wimp here. I'll say it looks busted.
It looks messed up to me. I'll sit with that. I'm not gonna lie. It's the card I'm the scared of the most this month. The dub here, though, is like, if it doesn't suck, if it's like totally fine, I get to take a victory lap on it not ruining my game.
For sure. That also just like this is the content creator dynamic. It's like, when we're wrong, we never talk about it again. When we're right, you'll hear about
it. About when I'm wrong all the time.
I'm just trying to give the people some ammo.
Okay.
When we're right, we'll remind you for a year. When we're wrong, yeah.
It's true. Did you know I was right about Lockjaw in the beta?
I actually
bring it back.
Dude, that one comment, that was so funny.
Nobody would ever mention that. He would never mention it four podcasts in a row.
That was one of the funniest comments, because that person was like, no way, surely he would mention it. And then they came back later at a different time, maybe even a day later, and replied to their own comment and went, oh yeah, every episode.
Yeah, people think I don't admit when I'm wrong.
So funny, bro. We do get some really funny comments. Anyway, speaking of new sections, because the CAM best Sunday best action on now, because we're recording this on a Friday this week, you want to give us the metagame in 60 seconds post OTA, post new cards?
I can give you the metagame in 1 second.
Do it.
Angela.
Thank God.
Everyone's messing around with Angela. High MMR players love taking game actions. This is a key thing to understanding the psychology of high MMR players. There's some agency simping going on here. And God, Angela lets you take so many game actions and rewards your brain with so many good chemicals. It's great.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, if you listen to this podcast, you enjoy it, then one thing you can do is leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. There's a video version of this on YouTube at youtube.com/the_snapshot. To subscribe while you're there. Twitter's our Brendan APG, KMBestMS, and KM is streaming more frequently than usual.
Yeah. Weekends, evenings, weekdays. I'm playing Marvel Snap on the internet. It's crazy.
Thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you next week.